Hello, this is Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and I'd like to welcome you to my AAT Budget Special podcast. So what did Alistair, our esteemed Chancellor, have in store for us, and most importantly, does it matter? Now, the reason I say that is timing. We've got a general election in about 6 weeks' time, so there's no possibility of these measures going onto the statute book apart from the emergency powers given to government to continue collecting taxation. So it seems to me that these measures only have meaning if Labour continue in government. In my view, if Labour win, these measures will make it into the Finance Act 2010, and there may not be another budget. No promises, though. But if the Tories win or form a government in a hung parliament, which is possible, then there will be a second budget, probably within a couple of months of the election, and then anything's possible. Although my guess is that there won't be any major changes to taxation, at least in the short term. So what did the Chancellor have to say? Well, it was like the old marriage rhyme, something old and something new and something borrowed, actually quite a lot borrowed. So let's start by quickly reviewing the government finances. As you'd expect, government borrowing dominated the headlines. And as predicted, the borrowing in the current year, although $11 billion short of what Alistair had previously predicted, is still at eye-watering levels. It's still at a record high. And if you think about the total debt, not just 1 year, but the total debt, that is the national debt, it's predicted to hit £1.4 trillion by about 2014. And to put that into perspective, that's about £56,000 for every household in the UK. So what about the taxation? Let's start with income tax and a bit of old news. BN01, that's the budget notice number one, sets out the income tax rates and personal allowances for 2010-11, and this effectively restates the PBR news. And as far as I can see, personal allowances are frozen for all taxpayers, and age allowances also remain at their existing levels for the next tax year. Remember too that personal allowances are gradually withdrawn regardless of age for rich individuals. And that means any individual above £100,000. You'll recall that the reduction is £1 for every £2 above £100,000. So that means that anyone with an income of twice the personal allowance above £100,000, let's put a number on that, it's around about £112,500, will have completely lost their personal allowance. For income tax itself, basic rate stays at 20% and the basic rate limit, £37,400, and the higher rate stays at 40% above that. But of course, we've got the additional rate of 50% on taxable income. That's, remember, after a personal allowance, but that will long have ceased to have any meaning, above £150,000. Oh, and don't forget the 10% starting rate. That's been reconfirmed on savings, 10% on bank interest, for example. But few people in practice will qualify for that because that limit is £2,440. And just to be clear about this point, I've said it before, but forgive me if I spend a moment or two on it again because I think it's quite an important point. If you've got, say, a 68-year-old pensioner who has total pension of £10,000 and bank interest of £1,000, then they will qualify for the 10% starting rate because their taxable income is the £10,000 of all-up pensions plus £1,000 of bank interest. That's gross, by the way. So that makes £11,000. Knock off their age allowance, which is not restricted because they're not a particularly rich pensioner. That is at £9,490, which means that they have got £1,510 of taxable income. And in that column, £1,000 at the top is the bank. And because that's well below the £2,440, they will have the 10% starting rate on their bank interest. But if you had a pensioner with a total pensions of 20 rather than 10 we've just used, and then they had an additional £1,000, they, even after you've knocked off their age allowance, would be significantly above the £2,440 line, and so they would not have the 10% rate, and their bank interest would be taxed at 20%. Next up on the personal tax front is the confirmation of the Bash the Bankers tax. That's the bank payroll tax, to give it its proper title, and oddly paid by the banks on bonuses and not, as one would have expected, by the individuals. And it applies to bonuses above £25,000. So that means that an average hardworking employee in a high street retail bank getting, say, £10,000 or £12,000 as a bonus, or even £1,000 as a bonus, they're going to be okay. It won't affect them. It's on bonuses that are above £25,000, so it's designed to grab the big ones from Canary Wharf. The rate of tax is 50%, and already the government reckons it's going to bring in about £2 billion. That's about four times Alistair's original prediction. At the moment, it's a one-off tax on bonuses paid in the window from the 9th of December 2009 to the 5th of April 2010. And it applies to bonuses which consist of money, money's worth, benefits and loans. So Alistair is going to try very hard to get as much money out of that as he can. Another bit of old news was the re-presentation of the changes to pensions taxation, again announced in the pre-budget report. I'm not going to spend too long on this, as it's another bash-the-rich measure. But it's in Budget Notice 33, and it's about implementing the restrictions on pensions tax relief. Now, as you'll be aware, that if you're a basic rate taxpayer and you pay money into a pension scheme, you get relief at source. That's good news. For every £80 that you put in, the government will add back £20, so £100 goes into your pension pot. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, you get additional tax relief. Now, what the Chancellor is trying to do here is to restrict higher rate relief on people who are earning very large sums. And we're talking about people here with incomes in excess of £150,000. And just to make the point briefly, from April 2011, the pensions tax relief on contribution will tail off above £150,000 and up to £180,000 when the tax relief is expected to be restricted completely to just basic rate tax relief. And as you'd expect, to stop people from jumping the gun, there are restrictions to the amount that an individual can pay into a scheme in 2009-10 and 2010-11. And it's basically restricted to £20,000 per annum. There are some other quite complex rules in there, but I think that's beyond the scope of what I want to say. I suspect that most AAT members will not have too many clients in that bracket, but it's worth mentioning as it's very topical. Still on the theme of personal tax, let's have a quick look at the ISAs. You'll recall that the limits were raised in Budget 2009 for older taxpayers, but from April 2010, all savers can benefit from the higher limits. That's 10,200 overall, of which 5,100, that's half, can be in cash. Now, that's the old news. The new news, announced yesterday in the budget, was that from April 2011, the ISA limits will increase in line annually with the RPI. Let's move on to employees. We've long been used to benefit charges on cars and vans, and of course, with the rules in ITEPA 2003, that's the Income Tax Earning and Pensions Act. But yesterday, Alistair Darling announced that employees and directors, remember they tend to be grouped together, provided with a car or van for private use, which cannot produce any CO2, or alternatively an engine with very low emissions, and that's 75 grams per kilometre or less, both of those groups will enjoy a more beneficial benefit charge. So if the car or van, there's two in there, remember, the car or the van cannot produce any CO2 at all, Now, what might that be? I think electric cars or hydrogen powered or something similar. Then there will be a total relief from the benefit charge. And that's got to be good news. But if the car has very low emissions, this is the second group here, that's 75 grams per kilometre or less, then the charge is going to be reduced to 5% of the list price. And that's good news too. And the implications are clear. That's going to drive employers to provide greener cars, much greener cars, to directors and employees. Okay, now on to some business tax. A bit of old news, confirmed yesterday, was the CT rate, corporation tax rate, for small profits. That is on profits up to £300,000 per annum. And it was confirmed that that rate will be frozen to 21% from the 1st of April 2010. That's good news for small companies, isn't it? And there's nothing else in the budget to suggest that the very tax-efficient route of having personal allowance salaries and dividend strips, they're still good. They're still good to go, well, at least until the next budget. But now for something even more exciting, capital allowances. And I'm referring to the annual investment allowance, the AIA. Alistair announced that that would double from £50,000 to £100,000 with effect from April 2010, either the 1st of April if you're a company or the 6th of April if you're an unincorporated trader. Now remember, the AIA is for businesses of any size investing in most plant and machinery, sadly not cars though, but that's especially good for smaller businesses. Although remember that sole traders will often forget that their tax bill will jump once the effect of an AIA has passed, especially when that's compounded with the payments on account system. There's one point here which is an apportionment issue which I ought to spend a moment or two on. If, for example, you had a company with a calendar year from the 1st of January 2010 to the 31st of December 2010, if you can imagine a 12-month timeline there, we've got a stick in the sand 3/12 of the way through that. That's on the 1st of April. So the first 3/12 of the year will be at the old AIA rate, that's 50,000 per annum, and the 9/12 of the year, the remaining 9 months from the 1st of April to the 31st of December, will be at the new rate of £100,000. So not surprisingly, in that transition year, there will be an apportionment. So the apportionment will be 3/12 of 50. That's a maximum of 12.5 expenditure for the first 3 months. And the proportion from the 1st of April to the 31st of December, that's 9/12 of the new number. 9/12 of 100,000, that's 75,000. So the maximum AIA for this transitional year would be the sum of the two, 12,500 plus 75,000. So that's going to make 87,500. A bit beyond the scope of this podcast is how that expenditure falls, but the maximum you can spend in the first 3 months is seemingly limited to 50,000. With the balance in the other 9 months. So we do need to be aware of how the expenditure falls, but the main news seems to be good. Now, there's one more bit of capital allowance news that I'd like to put in front of you, and that is in respect of zero-emission goods vehicles. What Alistair has announced is another one of these rather green measures, and it's 100% first-year allowance on zero-emission goods vehicles. That's basically electric vans, electric lorries. Now, that's a first-year allowance, so that's distinct and separate from the annual investment allowance that we've just been talking about, and that's for new expenditure from April 2010. And incidentally, it must be on new and not second-hand vehicles, so it's trying to stimulate the green sector of the economy. Okay, well, that's enough, I think, about business tax, and that's pretty much all that was in the budget. Let's move on and talk about capital gains tax. I like capital gains tax. Let's start with the good news. We didn't get the expected increase to CGT. I've been wandering around like a lot of people recently saying, well, we might get a significant increase to CGT. There's quite a gap now, I think you'll take the point, between the proposed top end, the imminent 50% income tax rate, and the background rate of CGT, which has been 18% now for a year or two. So that's a 32% differential, which of course drives people to think, how can we get stuff out of income and get it into capital? So that's the first thing. We didn't get that expected increase. And actually, on capital gains tax, the news got even better. The entrepreneur's relief, which if you remember is a way of reducing your CGT liability if you are an entrepreneur, and that gives you an effective tax rate of 10% through a rather bizarre calculation, but let's just grip the main number. It's an effective CGT rate for entrepreneurs of 10% on the sales of their businesses. And the point about that is that it was limited over the entrepreneur's lifetime to £1 million. And I'm delighted to report that that has doubled to £2 million. And that is effect for disposals on or after the 6th of April 2010. So that's fantastic news for entrepreneurs, because the problem with serial entrepreneurs, the sort of the dragon's den inhabitants, was that they'd very swiftly use up their £1 million. I have to say that I don't think this is something that's going to affect a lot of AAT people. It will affect the serial entrepreneurs in our ranks, or at least in our clients' ranks. So pretty good news there for CGT. No increase and a doubling of the lifetime allowance from £1 million to £2 million. And while we're on the subject of capital taxation, not quite such good news on the inheritance tax front. We grew up knowing and hoping that the nil rate band would increase slowly and steadily over the years, and with a few fits and starts, it's broadly done that. Finance Act 2007 actually said that it'll rise and keep on rising, give or take, with inflation. The trouble is, that's now been reversed. And the Finance Bill 2010 aims to freeze the nil rate band at the current level of £325,000. And under the proposals unveiled yesterday, that freeze will be extended from 2011-12 right up to 2014-15. So the effect of that is that the nil rate band is going to be frozen for about a five-year period. Above the nil rate band, of course, it's a flat rate of 40%, and that's often been criticised. So that's the major news on inheritance tax. It's going to drag more and more people effectively into the charge to inheritance tax. Right, as we head on down towards the end of this podcast now, let's have a quick look at the mighty VAT. And first we'll deal with our expected annual news. And that is that the VAT threshold for registration has increased to £70,000. Originally 68, so that's gone up 2,000, and the deregistration limit has increased from 66 to £68,000. Those changes are from the 1st of April 2010. That's good news, because that's the sort of thing that AAT members like to hear for their clients, because we're always being bombarded with questions like, how do I avoid VAT registration? Can I set up another business? Do I set up a partnership? All the usual questions that we've got used to fielding. So it just helps a little bit by raising the threshold and taking away a few more businesses out of the clutches of VAT. The tests for registration remain the same, the principal one, of course, being the cumulative turnover in the last 12 months. Incidentally, this is something I must raise, it's so important, and hidden away from the budget revelations, not even with the new news on online filing for VAT, which is also scheduled to hit the blocks on the 1st of April, there's a little known measure in VAT for paper filers. The basic news is that if you are a paper filer, that is, you put in paper VAT returns plus your cheque, from the 1st of April, that cheque must have cleared by the due date. Now, that has got almost no profile in HMRC's website. It was hidden away in a What's New on the 25th of February. But I found that quite alarming that there was no better publicity attached to that one. And I think we've just got to make sure that our clients get their returns plus the checks in sufficient for those funds to clear. And I would recommend 7 working days. While we're on the VAT, we've also got our other expected annual news, the fuel scale charges. Remember, they change every year, at least have done traditionally, for all accounting periods that begin on or after the 1st of May. And you can get those off the website, and they will be in the VAT news that goes out with VAT returns. So 2 expected measures, and they pretty much hit as we would have expected. My last point in this tax podcast for the budget is in respect of stamp duty land tax. And I've got some good news and some not so good news. The good news is for first-time buyers, that is, first-time purchasers of residential property, not notice commercial. And the finance bill is going to introduce a relief from stamp duty land tax for purchases of residential property of up to £250,000. The purchaser or purchasers must be first-time buyers, and they've also got to intend to occupy the property as their only or main home, so no buy-to-lets here. This relief is actually going to be time-limited to 2 years, and that applies to purchases between the 25th of March 2010 and before the 25th of March 2012, so we got 2 years in there. Now, the bad news is that that's going to be funded by a new SDLT rate of 5% for residential property over £1 million. Not notice commercial property. Both of these measures refer to residential properties. The commercial properties seemingly escape from this. So that's a sly dig by the Chancellor at successful property owners. The current rate on a £1 million house is 4%. That's going up to 5%. And therefore, that's going to add £10,000 to a £1 million property. Okay, folks, that's my budget special podcast. Hopefully that's given you an appreciation of the tax points raised by the Chancellor on the 24th of March. And I will be dealing with these and many other tax issues in the spring update series. And I very much look forward to seeing you there. Cheerio.